Hi, everyone, and welcome again to another edition of Kyle and Patrick's Still Yet To Be Named podcast. We probably should really put some effort into coming up with a name for this thing.
Yeah, I mean, I thought we enlisted the aid of the audience, and they're just letting us down. I'm going to pass the buck. I'm passing the buck on that.
That's very true. We have not received any suggestions. But we could just name it the Unnamed Podcast.
I feel like that's already been done without our consent, and that's fine.
Okay. Anyways, the first thing, our original plan was interrupted about 15 minutes ago by an announcement from Adidas Lacrosse that they've signed Miles Jones. And this, we hinted at this, didn't we, on the podcast?
I believe we have. Yeah, definitely.
But this was not a surprise, I think, to either of us. We had heard rumblings that this was potentially going to happen. But what's your take on the, now that it has officially happened, on Miles Jones signing with Adidas?
I mean, they had to get somebody, right? Like, that was their goal when they relaunched is, you know, they did kind of a soft relaunch. Yes, they had a lot of products. They outfitted, you know, a fair amount of college teams. And they already have the soft goods sponsorship with a few college teams. So I think this is definitely a step in the right direction. I know that Jones was out there and other companies definitely had meetings with him. So I think it's great that Adidas, you know, beat out other major companies. I won't say who they are, but I know that he had meetings with pretty much every major company, major player out there. And for him to go with Adidas, I think, you know, it's a good sign. I think the first time Adidas was around, which actually wasn't Adidas, it was their name sold to a marketing group that made, they didn't make the pads. They signed John Grant Jr. And that was like 07, 06. So like 10 years ago. And that now they're back and they're backed by their own research and development team making all of these products. Some of their cleats are the football cleats, sure. But I think they look awesome. I actually really like Adidas cleats, believe it or not. I wore them for a while until I started wearing the unnamed cleats that I'm wearing now that I can't talk about until the next podcast. But I think it's a great move for Adidas, great move for Miles Jones. You know, diversify that portfolio, get a major brand on your side, and go forward with it. Be the ambassador. I think it's great.
Yeah, so I think that's honestly, I think the fact that Adidas would want Miles Jones, I think it's not a surprise, because as you mentioned, sort of everybody had meetings with him. I think if you're a gear company, you would have been stupid not to have wanted to sign Miles Jones. The appeal there is obvious. But I think what's more interesting, and unless it's just that Adidas offered so much money to him that he couldn't turn it down, it's interesting that sort of from the other perspective that he picked Adidas. Because
yeah.
I feel like Miles Jones is one of those guys that even more than comparable figures in terms of ability, you know, at the college and other rookies, that Miles Jones doesn't do cool things. Things are cool because Miles Jones does them.
That's an interesting take. I think he does cool things.
Oh, I mean, like, you're right, he does cool things, but he's one of... He is a guy, I think, he's Adidas is cooler because they have Miles Jones.
Yeah, that's fair, for sure.
You know, it's not like, there are certain people who are not necessarily trendsetters in terms of what people are doing and what's cool, and Miles Jones, I think, is definitely someone who has sort of the gravitas, if you will, to up Adidas's, you know, appeal with younger players.
Yeah, I think it's a big part of them upping their, you know, appearance with a signature athlete that they can build other signature athletes around. You know, there's other guys coming in. So his classmate, Demer Klass, I can say this, I know this for a fact, turned down more money to sign with East Coast Dyes than other companies that were pursuing him, and actually thought he was signed to a certain large company. I'm sorry, I can't use names. Like, it's part of the deal. Like, I can't tell you who it is. But there was a company that had a deal ready with him. they kind of were ready to sign off on the papers. And, you know, Greg from ECD comes in, knows him personally, and signs him. And that's, you know, Damir Klass is all of a sudden the next ECD athlete, which is great. You know, like, I think the best thing about new companies and established companies, so Adidas is established in almost every other sport except lacrosse, and they're making this move for Miles Jones. You know, East Coast Dyes is basically what, like a six-year-old company, and they're signing guys too. So we're turning into, I think it's a sign of the legitimacy of not only lacrosse, but the MLL as well. I think it's great that pros are getting recognition that they deserve, and that companies are courting them when they come out of college. I think that's really cool.
And just the guys have multiple options that there's bidding for the endorsements of these the athletes.
Right, and they make the choice. You know, I think that's great as well. One of the main knocks on the MLL when it was created was that everyone had to use Warrior gear, and then, you know, New Balance acquires Brian, and then all of a sudden it's just Brian and Warrior, and you couldn't use anything else. And people rallied against the league, like, oh, how can you do this? And it's like, well, they invested the money, so they get to pick who comes in. Now, basically, if you pay the entry fee, you know, just like any other professional league, by the way, which all these other companies have to pay entry leagues to have entry fees to have their have players that they sponsor use their gear. The MLL is there now. You know, you see guys with STX, see guys with Maverick. Obviously, all the teams are outfitted in Cascades as they always have been, and you see a couple Warrior helmets in there because of the Warrior connection. But I think it's great just going forward with the professional level. And having some competition between the brands is always good for innovation as well.
Is that the next step, though, for Adidas? And also, you can kind of fold Under Armour under this umbrella. But are they – do you know anything about – or have you heard anything about their plans? Are they going to sponsor the MLL?
I have heard – so, okay. Since you specifically asked about Under Armour, I will say that I have heard that Under Armour has been talking to the MLL about entering – as a sponsor for a while. And it's funny, the very beginning of the league, they had like an apparel sponsorship for the undershirts, which I believe Adrenaline has now, like very beginning of the league. And then it phased out when Warrior introduced their performance line. Warrior soft goods are all now going to be New Balance soft goods going forward. But getting back to Under Armour, I have heard that they are talking. I thought a deal was ready at Championship Weekend last year. And then it didn't materialize. So maybe there's some, you know, other considerations they're working out. But, you know, I'm actually really happy that Under Armour's getting involved, not just from they're a Baltimore, they're a lacrosse company kind of level, but working with their people in charge of lacrosse, their director of lacrosse, has been really great for me with Inside Lacrosse. And they also just picked up my relegated Premier League team, Aston Villa. And they're making jerseys, so hopefully I get some, you know, free jerseys out of it at some point.
always gotta put in the request there. But I mean, yeah, they, like Under Armour, I feel like in terms of signing athletes, has Scott Ratliff, Jeremy Sieverts. They have some big name players, and it's just that I feel like that missing piece for them is the MLL sponsorship to allow those players to actually use Under Armour gear in the league.
Right, and they already have the indoor sponsorship, so that would be a nice bookend. They're the primary
sponsor. And they're the only one. Can you use anybody else's stick?
You can't use anyone else's stick. You can definitely use other people's footwear based on doctor's notes and stuff like that, and I can't tell you how I know that, but that's true. I feel like I'm a secret agent right now. I know all this gear knowledge, and I can't drop it on you. I'm sorry, guys. Like, some of it's embargoed. I have to sign NDAs, like, every other week. It's the most fun and frustrating part of the job is seeing cool new stuff. But I always get excited to share when I'm allowed to share. And hopefully we'll be able to do that very soon. So we're coming up. We just had the regular season finale of Major League Lacrosse this summer. We're heading to the playoffs. You know, everybody's kind of upset about how stuff shook out, which teams made it. If you guys don't know, Ohio is the first place team. They will be playing Charlotte, who made it in with the fourth spot.
Well, they're the number one seed. They're really, there's technically, in a sense, there are seven first place teams because they all tied.
That's the thing. And I'm actually going to let you explain that. But that's going to be fine.
We're not going to explain it as we talked about before this. We're not going to go through and just read you the. There exists out there like a PDF. It's like 3 or 4 pages that goes through as much tables and explains exactly why the teams that are in and the teams that are out are out. But I want to comment, though, on the process that it, my reading through that, it relies very heavily on head-to-head and your record against, when in the case of multiple team ties, your record against the teams that you're tied with. And so the way that it works is basically if you have the best record against the teams that you're tied with, then you get put in as the number one seed, or as like the next highest seed. So the reason that Ohio is the number one seed is they had the best record head-to-head against the other 6 teams that they're tied with.
Correct.
And so, to me, though, that kind of exposes why I don't like head-to-head tiebreakers in a lot of contexts, because essentially the reason that Ohio is the number one seed is because they lost to Atlanta instead of, like, New York or Chesapeake. Or those other teams that they're tied with, or Denver. They lost both their games to Atlanta, so they were 2-2 against Florida and Atlanta, the 2 teams that are out of the tiebreaker. And that's why they're the number one seed. And it's, in a sense, yeah, they have the best record against the good teams, but that also means that they had the worst record against the bad teams. And I'm not sure there's a reason to prefer one or the other when you go to break ties.
Well, I think when you go to break ties, you have to take into account, I mean, no one could see, although we did actually a couple weeks ago, we were like, wait, what happens if everyone finishes at 8-6? And oh, look, everybody did.
That's true. When was that?
We were discussing. That was like two or three weeks ago, right?
No, it was longer than that, because we were talking about when Denver was like 3-6, we were talking about why they weren't eliminated.
Right.
And that was, oh yeah, I guess they could. There could be a huge tie at 8-6 where they could get in through tiebreakers.
It's still a nightmare scenario. I think the thing that I would like to talk about, which I kind of raised on Twitter a little bit, is are these the 4 best teams in the league? And my contention, just in terms of not consistency, because by the way, everyone was wildly inconsistent all season. Well, everybody.
That's why nobody finished better than 8-6.
Exactly. So there's 2 teams that were just, you know, not good, but still managed to beat good teams. So take that for what you will. But I believe that there are 2 other teams that are more deserving, that have tougher breaks, that got kind of screwed by the tiebreakers. And I think it's the Bayhawks and the Rattlers. And, you know, for the Rattlers, it's kind of bittersweet that like they actually did as well as they could. I did an awards column this week, and I went over how many of their players from the 2015 roster went on to other teams and became starters on other teams. And I think they put up somewhere around 90 points. That's a testament to how many guys they lost, but also the success and talent that they had last year and still couldn't get.
Like 90 points because Kevin Rice had 58 of them.
I wasn't even counting him. I actually, when I was going through to my head just now, I totally forgot because, I mean, he still had, you know, 28 points last year for the Rattlers, but had to share time. You know, like Randy Stats was on that team. Mark Matthews was on that team.
So Mark Cockerton was on that team. All was playing for the Rattlers last year.
Yeah, and Mark Cockerton is no slouch and did a great job for them. Justin Turry was on that team and was a first-line midfielder in Boston. So all these guys left, and the Rattlers still got to 8-6, man. And that's a huge accomplishment considering they play at, like, you know, a high school that doesn't serve beer, which is another point I made. Sorry, Rochester, but I want you to succeed. I think their defense was also, I believe, had the lowest goals against in the entire league, and they still didn't make it.
Yeah. Well,
so clearly,
that's what I was getting to with, or kind of alluding to, I didn't quite get there with my head-to-head tiebreaker rant. But the Rattlers, I think, are the team that genuinely got screwed because they had by far the best goal differential in the league.
Right.
I think you're right that they allowed the fewest goals, and they were not far behind whatever team scored the most goals.
Right.
And to me, when you have, especially with this multi-team, huge head, like, tiebreaker scenario, that, if you look at sort of what advanced metrics tell you in sports in general, goal differential is a good measure, is a predictive measure of how good a team is above and beyond just their record.
Yeah, and you bang that drum. I think there's something to that. I don't know if I believe in that 100%. My argument for the Bayhawks is like, you know, they played really well and they're fun to watch and they have all these great players. And then I went through some of their stats. They led the league in turnovers with 277.
Well, allegedly. Well, are those okay. Real? How good are those turnover numbers? Doesn't that just mean that their home scorekeeper kept turnover stats in all the games? Because...
Well, yes and no. I mean...
There were definitely some games where no turnovers were kept, like stats were kept.
So here's... You're right. But the disparity with that probably affects most teams. And also, the next closest team, according to these alleged stats, is Boston with 233. And I think that matches up. I actually thought, I went through the stats and I thought it was Boston that had the most because they definitely turned the ball over a ton. And then I was like, well, you know who else turns it over a lot? Ohio. And then I just got into a rabbit hole of turnovers that were allegedly recorded. And seeing Chesapeake at 277, I'm just like, if that's right, then they definitely shouldn't be in the playoffs. Like, that's fair. Again, we're going through this alleged thing, and shout to whoever took out my perhaps too egregious and aggressive line about the MLL hiring professional stat keepers in my awards column. That was probably for the best. Thank you. I don't know who did it, but one of you did it. But that's probably for the best. So, thank you.
I don't necessarily know that turnovers that you can say they don't deserve to be in just because they had a lot of turnovers. Because it's something I have explored, but the data at the college level is really tricky. Is do teams that have more turnovers in part because they're working for better quality shots? Because there's sort of a situation at the end of a shot clock, if you don't have a good look, do you, A, jam it inside of somebody and risk a turnover? But if it's successful, then you get a good shot on goal. Or do you take a contested outside shot that's just not a good shot, but isn't going to be a turnover?
Well, I think for me, you find the average of all the turnovers, and then the team that's hot the highest out of that average, regardless of whether or not, you know, you're kind of comparing it in a percentage to, like, how much more egregious is this team's total versus the average, not just the total number. Do you know what I mean? I think that's a good baseline for MLL. But in the MLL, I mean, are we considering turnovers when the shot clock expires? Because that's kind of like...
Yes.
I mean, yes.
A shot clock violation is a type of turnover. I would argue it should be credited as a team turnover. But it's a change. Okay. It's a change of possession. I am of the opinion that in stats, lacrosse statistics in general, every time there's a change of possession, there should be some kind of stat recorded.
Okay, so a guy takes a shot and there's no one behind to back it up. Is that a turnover? Are you in that camp?
No, mostly because...
Why not?
Well, okay, from a coaching standpoint, it is a turnover. Like, you lose possession of the ball. But from a statistical standpoint, I think more often than not, it's the responsibility of whatever attackman didn't run to the end line fast enough.
Right.
But it's also sometimes the shooter, if it's like a ground ball and there's obviously no one behind it at X because everybody was up contesting the ground ball, and you just pick it up and rip it wide when there's no one even close. It might be the fault of the shooter. Or some guys might have the awareness to not do that, or to at least make sure they get it on cage in that type of situation. Because they know they're going to lose it anyways if it's off cage, so at least give it a chance to go. It's a tricky... I just don't know who the turnover should be credited to. And I don't think that from a stat keeper standpoint, you can ask them to figure out which attackman was the one that should have backed it up behind the cage.
Well, why not make that a team turnover too, then?
But no, I just think you should. It should just be its own stat. Don't confuse things. It's just a whatever you want to call it, an end line, like a defensive run out, or an, you know, just call
okay,
it.
Okay, I mean, you're the stat guy. I'm just
own,
like being...
It's its own thing, because I think I would record it as a positive stat for the defense. Whichever guy is closest who wins it, give that guy, like, a, you know, a plus.
Yeah, what would you call that? Like a force? What would you call the stat? You get to name it. You just made it up. Go.
I mean, there's a couple different names I've heard a lot of. Like, it's something that a lot of, like, Division I coaches track.
Right.
So I've heard people call them steals.
Okay.
I'm not totally sure. It's just a shot backup, a defensive shot backup. I just call it a backup.
I think we call it a Patrick.
A defensive backup.
That's what we call it. That's a Patrick stat. So I think we call it a Patrick.
Well, then, like, what about all the other stats that I've created? Can just name them all after.
Those are amalgams of other stats, though. This is, like, its own stat. I mean, I feel like you deserve it. It's good. Let's do it.
I probably never did it in my playing career.
That's all right. That doesn't matter. No one cares that we played. No one cares. Trust me, I just played in Placid. No one gave a crap who I was or where I went. It was awesome. That was the best part.
Some people care. People on Twitter who were like MLL players sometimes, if they're trying to pick fights with me, like, where did you play? That's like
Captain Chirpies. Little Chirpies.
Yeah, no,
hey guys.
I have yet to really respond that way, but my response would be like, really, it's just, if we were on the field, that would be relevant playing a game, but we're on Twitter. And I have more followers than you, so
you could argue that, you know, players that chirp on Twitter is worse than us kind of trying to play.
I'm not talking about current players, I'm talking about like former players.
Oh, I know. That's even worse. But it's like, why are you going on my field?
Oh, that's why I feel bad.
I didn't go on your field.
Yeah, like if you maybe are somebody like when you have a stick in your hands on the field, but when you're on Twitter, like that's my ballpark.
Yeah. You don't have a stick there. You're on the bench. And you're just throwing water. All right, so let's move on from me being a jerk. And let's talk matchups. Let's talk matchups here. I mean, we can lament all we like about the teams that didn't make it in, but the fact of the matter is Ohio made it in, they're playing Charlotte, and New York made it in, and they're playing Denver. What about those matchups jumps out at you?
Well, I think the biggest thing is New York New York ended up, they lost to Ohio, but they get to play in Fairfield.
Home game.
Right, essentially right? It's a home game. They don't have to fly. And they don't have to play Ohio again.
Unless Ohio wins.
Well, right, but you at least don't have to play them again this week. I think when you give a week off and if they turn things around, then it almost potentially becomes a good thing that you get to have a revenge game.
Yeah.
Extra motivation for the championship. Unless it's a case of just, for whatever reason, the Lizards don't have anybody to stop Tom Schreiber and he just shreds them for like 8 more assists. And they lose because they played Ohio. But that's... Watching those games, I mean, Tom Schreiber's incredible, but I'm not sure there's anything in particular that the Lizards have some specific reason they can't stop him.
Right. I mean, they really can't. And also the Lizards can't stop John Grant Jr. So that's also a big part of that.
Yeah,
I mean, they tried different defenders on him.
A lot of his goals, though, were assisted. That was he was the finisher, but it wasn't like a Herculean one man kind of effort. That was a team effort on those 10 goals.
Not all 10. I broke it down. There were, and I know who scored on whom in those goals. I would say that half of them are assisted, and the other half are Junior being Junior.
Well,
you know what I mean?
No, that's
like catching the ball over the backside of his shoulder and then turning, and all of a sudden the ball being in the net. That's a Junior goal.
Well,
because
yeah,
no one
no,
else makes
no.
that play.
Like, I'm not to take anything. Like, there's a reason that no one else has ever done it. It's not that's n- when I say that it's not at all. A shot at his skill. It's just, I think, the part of the reason that no one has ever scored 10 goals is because a guy as skilled as John Grant Jr. hasn't ever played with an offense that has as many other weapons as this Ohio offense to get him the ball in those spots.
Or as bad as a New York defense with new pieces and guys flying around all over the place trying to figure out how to stop him.
There are just situations where, like, they ended up with Jacob Richard on him as a rookie short stick defender, one-on-one with John Grant Jr., and the Lizards defense doesn't want to slide.
Right.
Which is, yes, that's John Grant Jr. scoring the unassisted goal, but there's a reason that the Lizards didn't want to slide off those other guys, despite that matchup.
Right.
That's all I'm saying. This wasn't a case where
they don't slide anyway. This is the thing with New York. Like that this is why New York has lost as many games as they've lost, is they don't slide. New York generates.
That's true.
They really don't. Like I'm not saying they're bad because they don't slide. They play a defense wherein you do not slide. It's very rare, and if they do, it's usually Spallina flying in from a cross crease, and that's the only slide that's there. So I think, you know, it's interesting. He definitely scored at least one of those goals a man up to. But you know, looking at that game and kind of using that and their game earlier in the year where Ohio waxed them 22-10 as well, you know, it's easy to be like, well, that's going to be, you know, another massacre in the championship game if that's how it shakes out. But the fact of the matter is the Lizards are playing the Outlaws. And I've been watching tape of the Outlaws pretty much all day. I'm talking to BJ O'Hara after we finish recording here. Talk about a team that just went from like 0 to 100. Like, they were terrible. Their defense was a joke. You know, they were 2-6, and then they won the rest of their games. That's insane. It's insane.
Especially league with so much parity and inconsistency. Where you have
and they teams. Traded John Grant Jr.
Yes, that's true.
That's crazy. I watched their most recent game against the Lizards today. Garanlian did not play in that game, so that you can use that as an equalizer if you like. But the Outlaws are so good, you know, in the settled six because they have all these different pieces. You know, they have guys like Bailey Tills and Matt Kavanaugh, Eric Law. I mean, these are guys that are dynamic both on and off the ball. I think one of the reasons they traded Junior too was the emergence of Westberg as like that next guy that can make stuff happen. He's one of those players that gets better as the game goes on, which is not normal in any league whatsoever. But he's so good at spreading defenses to the wing, taking his guy underneath and just flying through the air and scoring. You know, he actually plays very similarly to Marcus Holman, especially as of late and last season, in his ability to create his own shot and get to the cooker. I really like
that comparison. That's a really good one.
Yeah, they have so many multifaceted. And then, you know, they already have Drew Snyder and Jeremy Sieverts, two of, you know, the best shooting midfielders, both on the run and stationary in the league. That's wild. You know, that's a lineup. And then they have two Bocklets that play offense that they can throw in. One's an off-ball guy. One's a ball carrier. You know, Chris is the off-ball and Mike is the carrier. And you look at all those offensive pieces, and you can actually kind of see why they traded Junior. I put out a shitty little tweet today being like, hey, you traded Junior for a second-round pick. Good job. Then he scored 10 goals. That was just facetious. But in all reality, you can see why they did it, because they're so much better as a team coming together and playing an unpredictable offense. Lots of picks, lots of runs from X, lots of cross crease feeds and looks that open up because the alleys are wide open to drive Jeremy Sieverts down, Drew Snyder down, Westberg down. Sometimes he'll initiate up top. They open things up, and if the Lizards press out and don't play interior defense, they're going to get destroyed. Like, you heard it here first. If the Lizards do not play good interior defense, they will lose the game. 1,000,000%. I actually believe that. I said that to their coach. So I definitely believe it. Whether or not that happens or not is definitely up to them. But I think the Denver offense is being discounted.
Yeah, there's a couple different points I want to make about this. And first of all, they also had Nick Acello ran in the midfield for them.
Yes.
has a couple has had a couple goals, which he's just, you know, he's a big time athlete.
Yeah, I mean, so let's say you play Snyder, Sieverts, and Acello. Who gets the pole? Do you short stick an attackman?
No, you short stick.
You short stick Acello, even though he truck sticks people like he's in Madden 2008.
Well, but he's that having a pole isn't going to help you not get trucked.
I mean, have you seen the Lizard's Demons?
Well, that's I guess
the poles.
That's
it might. It might.
Well, I mean,
we're just talking one game here. We're not talking, everything.
A player with a pole might be less likely to get trucked, but just the fact that he has a pole is going to stop Nick Acello from trucking you.
Yeah, that's fair. And he's got a great step down shot as well. Not just, his wild crow hop run up.
I know, and he scored a left handed goal this season too.
Yep.
But anyways. The 2 points I want to make is, first with regard to, we knew Matt Kavanaugh was going to be good. That's not a surprise that he's a good MLL player. But Bailey Tills from Brown. And I think this is something we've talked about, not on the podcast, but when you look at all of these Brown guys that I think people looked at the semifinal game of Brown against Maryland as Brown, was going to be, their chances were hurt because Dylan Malloy was injured, wasn't at full strength. They really relied on him. And it was sort of, these were system guys. The up-tempo offense caught people by surprise. Larkin Kemp and Alec Tullett with the poles where people weren't used to their stick skills. But when you look at Bailey Tills has been a solid MLL player. Kyler Bellistry has done well. Ended up starting an attack over, basically bumped out Wells Stanwyck in Boston. And Jack Kelly in goal for the Outlaws was the rookie of the year.
Yep, rookie of the year. Breaking, unfortunately, killing a bet between myself and IL publisher Terry Foy. I believed they would be Ryan Brown. He believed it would be Miles Jones. We were both wrong. Although, as you noted, Ryan Brown's second in the voting. So I think that $10 is mine. Maybe five. What do you think? Should you give me five? I think I get five for second place.
I don't know. I mean, it depends on how you phrase the bet.
That's fair.
Because if you were just picking a guy, you should have just bet which one would finish higher in the rookie of the year voting.
Well, now you're just you're making sure I don't get $5 here. Come on, man. We're on a podcast together. You got
to
help me
if
out.
If you bet that he was going to be the rookie of the year, then you both are wrong, and it's a push.
That's not helping me. I just asked you for help, and you doomed me to $0. But that's fine. We need to move on to the next matchup anyway. Chris Rosie will be doing the semifinal analysis for this game, and it is, I think, a less exciting game. Just off the top of my head, a little bit less exciting. Then again, I've underrated Charlotte all year. I'll admit it. I underrated you more than any other person, and I had thought you had no chance to beat the BayHawks in the last game of the regular season, and then you did it, and you made it to the playoffs. Congratulations, fam. You did great. But now you have to play the Ohio Machine in Minnesota. What's your read on that? What's your take here?
On the game being in Minnesota? Or on the game?
That and your winner, and your kind of like, analysis of what you think is going to happen.
Well, As I have become more open about the fact that I am from Ohio, and so the Ohio Machine is my team, so of course I'm going to pick their. I think they're going to crush them.
Wait, you're allowed to have allegiances? No, that's not fair. That's your analysis. I'm from Ohio, so the Machine are going to crush them.
That's not my analysis, and that's what I think is going to happen. Which is, you initially ask, you ask partially for my analysis and partially for that. And so that's my read on the situation of what's going to happen. In terms of the actual analysis of the game, I think the Lizards game really showed that Ohio has figured out how to work John Grant Jr. into their offense. And this is something we kind of talked about. We talked about a couple weeks ago on the podcast that after his first game, I think that they were still kind of meshing together. That you have those five the five other guys who have such good chemistry have been around each other playing for, was it like their third season together?
Right. For the most part, yeah.
With most of those guys. And so they all know each other really well, and I think it's taken them a little bit of time to kind of mesh John Grant Jr. into the offense. And I think for him to sort of, I don't want to say it, he's figured out some of his role as an off-ball guy.
Right.
That I think he, it seems like in Denver he was more, he felt like he had to carry the ball and create for himself and create for others. And now he has these guys around him. He can go, you know, he's on the crease and the man up. And I don't know.
I think I've always thought of this move that it's, you know, he's the extremely, extremely filthy rich man's version of Mark Matthews, right? That's my like take on his role in the Ohio offense and how he should be used. And he wasn't really used that way until this past week. But the fact that he was used that way and scored 10 goals is indicative of his, you know, possible effect on a game. There was a period probably earlier this season and a little bit last season where teams put short sticks on John Grant Jr. And you definitely still can't do that. That's still not something you can't face guard him. He's still going to get the ball. You know, when you have passers like Steele Stanwyck and Tom Schreiber,
but it's not a matter of
there's no way to deny him the ball.
Right, it's not a matter of denying him the ball. He's just now with the Ohio offense. That means whichever of those five other guys that you short stick, they're just going to dodge, and you're going to be in trouble if you're not ready to slide. And so if you're trying to face guard John Grant Jr., the rest of the Ohio offense is gonna score.
Right.
If you don't come off of him. And so it's a really tough situation. I think that's with the ability to fit him in the offense makes them, it's going to make them really tough to stop.
What do you make of Charlotte's chances though? I mean, they still have, you know, they play fundamentally sound lacrosse. They get back, they ride. They're like the only team in the MLL that rides every play. I think they're the only team in the MLL that rides every play actually this season. They are great. Their substitutions are actually great. They catch people in their subs. Denver does that as well. But they really catch people asleep at the wheel with their substitution patterns. It happened against Chesapeake, and that's part of why they won the game. Chan and Chuck, you know, has had a very underrated season, 50-point-plus season from him. I didn't see it coming. John Hawes is still having a good season. You know, you got Joey Sankey who can dodge anybody into the ground. I think you can't discount what they can do. I mean, your boy, Brendan Fowler, at the X as well. You know, that's a good matchup for them. It's not like they don't have a chance. I think they definitely have a chance.
For sure. I think though you hit on the right guys that Brendan Fowler could easily go 60-65% if he has a good game. Chanchuk, he scored like 7 goals against somebody, didn't he? Including the OT winner.
Yeah, I think it was Atlanta.
No, I think you're right. He's had an all MLL type season. That I guess you have Paul Rabel's lock, probably Tom Schreiber is definitely on there. But then that third all MLL midfielder, is it him, Joe Walters, probably maybe Drew Schneider for that third spot. But either way, he's been one of the best handful of midfielders in the league this season.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. It's a good point.
And you're right. I mean, Joey Sankey, I feel like he hasn't been quite the same season he had last year as a rookie. But, he's a threat to score. He's to create for that offense. And so there's, you know, they're definitely not, it's not a case where they're overmatched at all. And with the, I mean, hell, it's a season where 7 teams tied at 8-6. I think to think that any of those 7 teams wouldn't have a chance to win the championship would be silly.
Yeah, and this new format, I think, helps the better team come out on top. They used to play all the games in one weekend. And that was really like anybody can win that chip. Anybody can lift that trophy when you do that. I think this kind of protracted semifinals to finals thing that they're doing that a lot of most other pro sports do is definitely gives Ravens way to the more superior team. I think it's just a matter of, you know, Ohio's probably really excited to not see the Rattlers in the playoffs. And, you know, New York is probably not as excited to see Denver as they would be to see Charlotte. But I think that, you know, those two teams are definitely the favorites, Ohio and New York, to get to the championship weekend. And at the same time, I wouldn't be surprised if neither one of them made it. I think it actually would be great for those franchises and the sport if Denver and Charlotte just faced off for the championship. I think that would be awesome. And that would definitely teach a lot of teams a lesson to not take anybody lightly during the regular season and to put your best foot forward in every single game. And I think, you know, I'm not saying they don't do that, but there are definitely times where the Lizards and the Machine took teams lightly, and those teams smacked them in the face and took the W.
I mean, it happened. What happened the last time they played? That I think they announced over the loudspeakers that the Lizards had clinched a playoff spot, and then they promptly went out and gave up like 9 straight goals to Ohio, and were down 12-3 at halftime.
It's not a coincidence. Trust me, it's not a coincidence.
No, I have talked to people about that, and that's there. They're very adamant that was a huge part of the reason that the game ended up like it did.
I guess one last thing kind of before we transition into an interview I did with Kevin Lavelle up at Lake Placid to end the show. The Michael Noon suspended two games.
That's right. We got to talk about this.
Yeah, suspended two games for, you know, ostensibly a late hit on Paul Rabil as Paul Rabil was taking a shot at the top of the box in that Ohio-New York game.
It was a late hit. There's no doubt about that.
No, I'm not disputing that. I'm leading with late hit. It's definitely a late hit.
The way you said it made it seem like it was like an allegedly late hit.
Well, it's not alleged. It happened. I watched it. My take on that is that, you know, if it was anyone other than Paul Rabil or Rob Pinnell, it would have been one game. And it would not have been two. As it is, it's two. You know, basically guaranteeing if the Lizards in Ohio win that Noon won't play in that game.
It's also weird. Why not just call it a suspension for the rest of the playoffs?
I mean, a two game means he has to sit out next season. I mean,
if they lose,
so that's really not cool.
It's kind of, but it's just kind of weird that I don't know why. Did you really need it to carry over? But anyways. No, I think that your take is, that's more or less what I think, and I think that's the opinion of a lot of people that you saw on Twitter today. That there's really, it's difficult to answer the question of why was that bad enough to be a two-game suspension?
Do you think it was worse than David Lawson's, takedown of Jason Noble? Where Lawson got one game this year.
No, because I think in the issue with this, it was, I have to go back and look at, I'm not sure, but I don't want to say for sure that it was a legal, it was, other than being late, it was a legal hit, but it at least was somewhat of a lacrosse play.
I mean, he followed through on his hit. Like, there are times where that gets called and times where it doesn't. That was clearly called as a foul on the play.
I'm not disputing the fact that it should have been a foul, and I have no problem with it being a one-game suspension. I'm just saying it's. I felt like the David Lawson taking, like, that was not a lacrosse play.
Right.
At all.
Which is what every Bayhawk has made a contention of on Twitter.
Right.
The best part, by the way, just random aside, if you watch the replay of what we're talking about, the Noon hit on Rabil, after the play's over, Rabil kind of gets up, realizes he's not going to get to Noon, picks up Noon's stick, and chucks it to the end line, which is my favorite part of the play.
He chucked it at Scott Rogers, kind of. Whether or not that was, I don't think that was his intention, but it ended up, I think he had to sidestep it.
I think he just wanted to throw something.
It's off camera, but there's a picture someone took that I've seen of Scott Rogers. Like, looks like he's sidestepping the stick that was chucked.
Underrated part of the play. I tweeted something like, how can the league take one day and suspend Lawson one game and then take 3 days and suspend Noon for two games? I think that's a valid point. I think something that maybe people don't know is, like, Scott Hiller, former MLL coach of the Cannons, is in charge of the disciplinary action for these players and reviews and recommends the suspensions. The league carries them out, obviously, but he's kind of a – you know, a one man band as far as that goes. There's no real committee. They can tell you there's a committee. They're not. That's not true.
And also, it's up to him. Is there an appeal? There's no appeal.
There's no appeal. Which, you know, if there was a collective bargain agreement, maybe there'd be an appeal. Maybe we write that in. But there's not one of those either. It's the MLL. Yay. We have no. There's no rules. Oh, there's one rule. You can't hit a guy in the head who's a star of the league. Just kidding. That was me being facetious again.
I mean, that is a rule. But the fact that he's a star, you know, you can't hit it. It also applies you can't hit anybody in the head.
So here's the thing. Like, I said that, and people kind of automatically took my meaning to be like, well, how dare they protect the star? No. I actually think the opposite. I think it's good. You should protect your stars. And by the way, the MLL never protected their stars. Okay? You know why Mike Powell doesn't play in the league? It's not because he's out playing guitar. It's because he used to get murdered every game. And the league did nothing to protect him. Nothing. Okay? And that's not an opinion. Go back and watch tapes. Okay? I've talked to a lot of people, and especially with Mikey kind of now, or Mike, as he likes to be called now, coming back out into the lacrosse kind of community. Once again, he's coming to the forefront as like a topic, and kids are watching his highlights and being like, oh my God, who is this guy? He could still be playing in the MLL, but like, I wouldn't want him if I was him either. I didn't get protected the whole time I was in the league, you know, if I was him. So why would I come back? I think it's a good step. It's actually a step in the right direction. Sorry, Ohio. Sorry, Patrick, because you're an Ohio fan. But like, protecting Rabel the same way you would protect Pinnell is something the league hasn't done before. I called it a Gretzky rule, which, you know, not really true, but whatever.
I don't necessarily think you're wrong. I think there's protecting your stars, and then it doesn't necessarily mean you need to go over the top. And I felt like two games was over the top.
Really? I think like four games is over the top. Or three. I think two is like maybe not over the top.
It crossed the line beyond what was necessary to sufficiently protect Rabel.
I bet you could have made
it a suspension just for the playoffs.
Okay.
Or one game.
Okay.
And I think that would have, because I think it wasn't as bad as David Lawson's.
I don't either.
Got a game.
I don't either. And you know, a lot of people think Noble should have gotten a game too. I don't know. It's over. It doesn't really matter now in terms of anything except context for this current thing that we're talking about. But I really think two is okay. I didn't really have a problem with it. I really didn't. I can see how everyone else would, and I respect that everyone else would, but I think it's good that the league is taking steps to protect players. And I actually do maintain that if that was anyone else other than Pinnell or Rabel, it would have been one game. That's just what I think. I don't have anything else to back that up.
There's no way to prove it, because you can't recreate that exact play and that exact hit with somebody else.
I can tell you, I talked to coaches about it, and that was kind of their sentiment as well. And I can't tell you which ones, but I did talk to MLO coaches about it, and more than all of them agreed with me. So all of them agreed with me.
More than all of them?
Yes. That was just me saying all of them in a very abstract way. Okay, so speaking of abstract, we are moving on to a little interview I did with Kevin Lavelle at the day after the Legends game. We were supposed to do it after the Legends game. Logistically, that didn't happen. I ended up doing PA for that game on site. It was a lot of fun, announcing goals and scores and whatnot, and trying to get the charities Ranger Lead the Way and Headstrong Foundation, trying to get people that were at the game to support them with a donation. If you are listening to this and you want to support both those very, very deserving charities with a donation, just look up Headstrong Foundation and Ranger Lead the Way, and you will be able to do so. But that is it for me this week. Patrick, let everyone know where they can find you if they haven't already found you.
It's at Lax Film Room on Twitter and Snapchat, and at Lacrosse Film Room, all spelled out, on Instagram.
Great. And as always, you can find me at The Kyle Devitt, THEKYLEDEVITTE on Twitter and Instagram. Hit me up, and we'll have a discussion about these MLL playoffs, man. It's the most exciting time of the year. We're getting to the semifinals. Can't wait to give up another Saturday. Let's do this. Follow me for live tweets and updates, and also coverage and preview of both semifinals.
And now, take it away with your interview.
Hey everybody, this is Kyle Debbitt from Inside the Cross. I'm live, although you won't be listening to this live, at Lake Placid with one of the organizers and participants in the tournament, Kevin Lavelle.
What's up, Kyle? How you doing, buddy?
Great, man. Great. So this event has grown exponentially, I would say, in terms of age group, participants, all that stuff. There's a youth component earlier in the week. We're here for the adult portion. What do you kind of see the future of these events to be?
Yeah, it has been growing for sure. And, you know, we've added a lot on the women's side with Ashley Gersa coming in as our CEO of SLV, Summit Lacrosse Ventures, and a director here. But we're really kind of maxed out at this point. We really are kind of running out of space and daylight and time during the week. But we're just trying to become more efficient and kind of build out the best possible schedules and that type of thing, so that can we start over?
No, we can just keep going.
So that people can have the best possible experience throughout the week and keep improving that year over year.
Awesome. So this past Placid tournament, you added an event, the MLL Legends game. Just talk a little bit about and that you played in. So just talk a little bit about that experience.
It was a lot of fun. For a long time now, you know, I've been played in the MLL 11 years. I actually missed a couple of Lake Placid tournaments because of an MLL conflict, and you know, wasn't a big fan of that situation, and always wanted to try to get the MLL plugged in up here. I thought the route was pulling a game up here between two current teams, but it finally clicked that we have all of these ex-players and alumni of the league, and I threw it out to those guys, and pretty much in the lacrosse world, you throw an email out to a bunch of guys. Sometimes you get a couple wrong email replies and nothing else, but instantly got a bunch of ins, and from there it grew and worked out to be a great event.
Yeah, the custom helmet probably helped. A little custom gear.
Yeah, we got hooked up. The Warrior guys hooked us up with some nice helmets. We got some nice uniforms from Territory Sports, who works with the MLL. And GraphTex hooked us up with and New Balance with some tech tees to go underneath. So we looked good, which is the first thing, most important thing about playing in a game. You got to look good.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it gave us a fresh look to our gray beards, and everyone played well. It was a great group of guys, and everybody was excited to be there and had a blast.
Yeah, absolutely. And it aired on LSN. So I think, actually, if you're listening to this and you have LSN, you can go watch it right now and kind of experience the game. I wasn't in the booth, but I did get to do some PA announcing on the sidelines.
Yeah, and you did a wonderful job. You were there.
Say wonderful. I did an adequate job, but it was a lot of fun. I actually was like blown away by I love this experience personally. This is my 11th year in a row. Wild, I know, but it's my favorite event that I get to do in lacrosse, and I get to go to stuff like MLO and NCAA championships. This is still the most fun, even watching all the championships for the different levels. If you've never been to Placid, I would highly recommend coming to Lake Placid and checking it out, trying to get on a team. So the divisions go all the way to what age?
Yeah, so we go, so the scholastic part is Monday through Thursday, Wednesday, and we've got about 100 teams there. And the age levels are U16 and U18 on the boys' side, and basically middle school up through high school commit on the girls' side. So this year, on the girls' front, we had a whole division of commit-only teams. So we had UNC commits, Syracuse commits, Maryland commits, Florida commits, Dartmouth commits. And that level of play was Northwestern commits. Thank you. The level of play there was amazing. I had a great view from our headquarters right to that field, and some of the plays that were going on and playmaking and speed and just ability was fantastic to see. So that was really a great thing that evolved this year. And then on Wednesday afternoon, we have the 16 overs come in and some of the older guys. So we go all the way up through 18 and up in the open divisions to 16 over on
60.
Wednesday.
6-0.
6-0. It's very funny to watch. The guys are very talented still. It's a little slower. So it kind of looks like a very good U9 or U11 team. And just taller. But the guys are great. They've been here. Those guys have been the guys who have kind of built this tournament out as the players. Obviously, hard to have a tournament without players, and those guys have been the pioneers for us and have really paved the way for everybody and kind of created the experience that is so attractive for everybody. So, so yeah, they're still going. I think we had a past Masters game to start, and now we're up to a five-team division, and there'll be more people graduating into that division soon.
Awesome. Yeah, it's funny because it's like you come in here as an open, and you can just keep playing until you die.
Yeah, it's like, kind of...
You can come here. If you get on a team, if you're lucky enough to get on an open team in Placid, you can play forever. And I've hope to do that personally. I'm sure you do as well.
Yeah, I don't see why we wouldn't, you know?
It's a lot of fun.
It doesn't go away. It doesn't change. It stays the same. I think the sport's been growing across the country at a rapid rate over a long, long period of time now. But you get up here in August, and you see a lot of the same people and a lot of the same vibe and a lot of the same stuff on the field from age group to age group and men to women and boys and girls. Everybody's just enjoying the sport for the core of what it is and just happy to be together in one place doing it.
So we're taping this on Sunday. It's the day after all the MLL teams, you know, finished regular season play. John Grant Jr. had his 10 goals last night, kind of broke the record you were tied with.
I was, yeah. We had a famous game a long time ago. I think it was, I don't know, 2004 or 5, and the Bayhawks were just dominant. It was the attack of Gary Gate, Tom Marichak, and Mike Powell, which certainly is one of the better attacks you'll find out there. And inside lacrosse had put on the cover, best attack ever, and a picture of those guys. And our coach, Billy Day, sent a text, maybe it was an email or a phone call to all of us at that time, just saying, you know, best attack ever, getting us fired up for the game. I didn't know that I hadn't seen the magazine yet, so I thought he was talking about myself, Connor Gill, and Mark Millen, or in a different order, Mark Millen, Connor Gill, and myself being the third one there. And it was the other way around, so of course we're down there playing Baltimore. They're undefeated, we're undefeated, and we exploded. We won 25-10 or something, and Mark Millen had 9 goals and 5 assists in that game.
Yeah.
I was lucky enough to have 9. So it was a special game, and I thought the 9 goals may hold up for a long time, and maybe Junior would be done, but of course, great for him. He's definitely one of the all-time best players.
Man.
He is.
He's unkillable.
He's an animal. He deserves all the records and all the... he's a leader. He's one of the best ever by far, and it's great to see him do it, especially at this stage in his career.
Have you seen a lot of MLL? Would you got a pick this year at all?
You know, it seems like I've caught a couple games. It seems like it's just whoever shows up. You know, I know that Ohio team, you know, I stopped a couple years ago, and their core is pretty similar, I think. They're a tough team. They're well coached. They've got a lot of kind of guys who are younger a couple years ago that are probably now kind of more veteran, and they've been close. They've been itching. They're always tough to play. So I guess without having all the detail to have a very educated pick,
it's okay.
I'll go with those guys. I think that they're especially with Junior there. You know, he's found some success, and I think he'll bring them to the gold.
Awesome. Well, hey, thanks a lot for joining me on the pod, and you know. Where can people find more about Summit Ventures and you on the internet?
Yeah, our umbrella company is Summit Lacrosse Ventures, which is summitlacrosseventures.com. It's a very long web address, which we're trying to shrink that down. But you can find everything we do. We do tournaments for boys, girls, women, men across the country from Lake Tahoe, stopping through Chicago and out to the northeast here in Lake Placid. And we appreciate having the time with you today, Kyle. You're the man, and glad that we got the W against you on Friday. Your team, we kind of face each other each time we're up here.
Yep.
First game, and gives me the opportunity to give you a chirp back, which is nice.
Some good chirps. I missed a couple this year. I enjoyed chirping Jack Reed a lot.
Yes. Well,
it was a lot of fun.
He's easy. He's a big target. Yeah. He's an easy one.
He just begged me not to get the ball or do anything.
Yeah.
So that was good.
That was a wise move.
It's a good move on his part.
For sure.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Talk to you soon.
See ya.
Bye.